Richard, this is obviously a really demanding flight, but there's something that's much more common and simpler, which is two pilots that just happen to be going to the same place in two different airplanes, and they decide, why not go there together, right? Fly loose formation, no photos or anything like that. Is that okay? And where do you draw the line on something like that?
Yeah, I don't think that's okay. And it comes from just a healthy respect of what I think happens if you're going to call it a formation. So now there's a distinction here, right? If they're saying they want to go in formation, even fly it loose, what that implies is you have a lead and a wingman, and the lead's making all the decisions, doing all the talking, and the wingman's following him around. I don't agree with that. Now, if you just want to go and trail with each other and keep visual, but you're each just flying your own separate airplane with a visual trail, fine. I have no problem with that.
So is it kind of like if you for the purpose of ATC communications, if you would call yourself a flight of two versus two separate airplanes, is that kind of where the line is?
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction, is that because to call yourself, this is what I think people may not fully realize. When you are a flight lead, you now have to think for every airplane in the flight. To do that well and to do it safely, you have to understand their fuel load, their experience level, what they can tolerate, what they can't, put them on the right side of the formation. You're thinking not just about your airplane, but what's going on in that airplane that's on your wing. And it's not that hard. I'm not saying it's hard. It does take training.
Well, we're not going to have any controversy here because everybody agrees that this is a no-go. Paul, you seem the most adamant about it. Tell me why this is a definite no for you.
Oh, God. This is kind of like the higher level of stupidity because, I mean, I'm not a formation expert. I've done enough of it. I was trained by a military pilot, by an Air Force pilot. So, if I'm going to do a formation flight, there ain't no way I'm going to fly cross country and try to do a join. I mean, that's out of the question. So I want to sit down on the ground and have a long pre-brief with a lot of moving of hands and discussion of how to do a join and the lost wingman and all that stuff so that everybody knows exactly what the plan is going to be and frequencies, the whole thing. I'm not going to do a formation takeoff. And when all of that stuff is done, then I'm probably getting on the other side of nervous and would do it because, as Richard says, the chances of these things going bad is pretty high. And I don't see a lot of accidents around this, but there are some. And I think it may be because not that many people try it or they don't try close formation. But I think Richard's right. It's not hard, but it does require training. There's certain things you have to understand about energy and proximity and drag and all of that stuff that the average pilot is probably not going to have.
Dave.
Yeah, this scenario is exceptionally realistic, and it gives me the cold sweats because, I've been part of so many formation photo flights gone wrong. And, if you just stand back and think about it for a second, it's like, okay, what are we asking this untrained pilot to do? We're going to do an aerial rejoin. We're going to put him down sun so that he's going to be squinting into the sun the entire flight. We're going to use dissimilar airplanes, and we're going to fly through some really complicated airspace. And then we're going to throw in some potential miscommunications from hand signals or radio transmissions from the photographer. It is a total recipe for disaster. And, just as the aviation community, pilots tend to be very truthful people, with the exception of their formation qualifications. This is one thing they will flat out lie to you about. And, I'm like Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football because, we've got a vested interest in wanting to do these photo flights. We want to get pictures of these really neat airplanes. The owners want to get pictures of their airplanes. Everybody gets it. There's this pressure to do these. And on more occasions than I'd like to think about it, it immediately becomes apparent in the air that the person is not at all qualified for what they're attempting to do. But, this situation could be handled really, you could do this flight the way they envision doing it with a couple of formation qualified pilots. And it's like, it's not that hard to do. You'll get one to come in the RV. and you'll get one to fly the photoship, and that can be done well and safely. But the way the scenario is set up, I want absolutely no part of it.
Wally.
Well, I agree with everybody on the panel. I've got, you know, lots of years and hours of experience doing lots of different things in airplanes, and I've been in formation, but I was not the pilot in command. And there's two things I know I can't do. One is formation flying, and the other is acrobatic flying, simply because I've never been trained in either of those areas. And I know enough to know that I need training if I'm going to do it safely.
JP, do you have any formation experience?
As a passenger, several times, had a couple of friends that had vintage T-6s, and I quickly learned that there's a lot more to it than just two airplanes flying close together. There's a lot of coordination. Both of these pilots had formal training in formation flying. They pre-briefed it, and then we flew, and then they had a debrief afterwards. So there was a lot of procedures to it. There's a lot of mechanics to it. There's a lot of communications to it. And it's more than just, hey, I'm going to go fly, and you take some pictures of my airplane, and you fly close. There's a lot of things that can go wrong because you have two vehicles that are reasonably close to one another that are moving at a very fast speed. So there's a lot of things can happen. Then you have, you know, weather factors too, some winds or whatever. So I have an appreciation for formation flying. It's nothing that I have experience with.
What about you, Elaine? Any formation experience?
The closest I've come to that is I had flown some years ago in a workshop that they have for the mass arrival training for Air Venture, and I participated in one of those. That's the extent of my experience. Everything else has been very loose formation where you're pretty far apart. There's, you know, a couple in trail going to a similar destination, as had been discussed before, and that's the extent of it.
Mm-hmm. But you're also very solid no on this, right?
Yes. Maybe some of it's due to that first experience in the, I don't know if they even call it formation training, but, you know, the mass arrival training. Actually had to break off the group. It's just something uncomfortable happened, and I broke it off, which was the plan, and you're very well briefed on that, the hazards and how quickly things happen at those distances. And so until I get more extensive formation training, that's not something I would ever attempt to experience. And one of the questions I had is for those who or Richard has had the experience or with AOPM photo shoots, which I understand, having seen one up overhead, they're actually quite close together, and obviously they've prepared for it. Is do you ever have aircraft with the dissimilar speeds able to take those shoots, or if you're looking for something that's almost as fast as the RV to do it safely? I was really questioning the huge speed gap between the two aircraft as well.
Yeah, I'll actually ask Dave to address that. He's done a lot more of this GA dissimilar photo shoot flying. In fact, I learned it from him. He taught me this type of formation flying. Okay. So, Dave, you get more experience in that.
Well, I think it goes back to what Richard was saying about clearly delineated responsibilities between the lead and the wing. And then, a good lead pilot will maximize the amount of overlap in performance between two dissimilar airplanes and recognize that the lead pilot is flying both airplanes and avoid situations that compromise the ability of the wing pilot to maintain flying airspeed, for example. And another point is like, you know, the military invested a lot to train Richard to do the things that he does in formation flying. You know, I'm a civilian trained pilot, and, you know, and some of my favorite pilots to watch are also civilian trained pilots in the formation world. You know, I think about the Aeroshell team, or what used to be, you know, the Eagles when they were flying their Crested Eagles airplanes. You know, really creative, really, really dynamic, formation flyers. But it's done off the, really the hard-won lessons that the military perfected.
Paul.
Yeah, I had a question, and I'll put you guys on the spot for Richard and Dave. What do you think of these mass arrival ideas? I mean, they're not meant to be formation flights, and I think they tamp down that idea. But when I've seen them, I have been very alarmed at some of the, I guess, less than skillful flying. Are these things a good idea?
I'll just say, Paul, for my wearing my safety hat, they alarm me too. You know, when I see the numbers of airplanes that are coming in pretty close proximity and close timing, They concern me. I think I'm worried about them getting too big. I'm worried about the numbers, and they seem to keep growing. Now that they've happened, now every type of airplane wants to do the 172 Oshkosh arrival or the Cardinal or the, you know, whatever the group is. And I think EAA is starting to look at that pretty closely too.
You know, I've never actually been part of one of those formation arrivals. I did see there was a Cirrus group that was practicing at our local airport a few months ago. And I got to say, I was really favorably impressed with their diligence. You know, they were getting after it and flying in what I thought was a very smart, disciplined way. And as you know, I watched them fly in four ship groups that looked really solid. So I'm sure it's like anything else that it can vary, but I've never been part of it. The largest group that I've ever been a part of was at a RV formation training clinic where it was a 20 airplane group. And it's like, wow, 20 airplanes. There was a lot of metal in the sky. You know, I mean, each person is just kind of focused on their little part of it. But I just remember how difficult that was. And then when you see, you know, some of these groups are far larger, you know, I don't know how they would do that.
A few years ago, I signed up for formation training with one of those groups. I thought it would be a cool way for me to get some formation training, but they kicked me out when they found out I wasn't going to fly to Oshkosh with them.
So everybody here either has a bunch of formation experience or has had enough experience, you know, being around formation flying to understand the seriousness of it, the need for professionalism and training and all that. But you can imagine the pilot in the scenario maybe not having been exposed to this, just sort of taking the word of their friend that, you know, I've done this before. You don't have to do anything different than you would all these times that you've flown this solo, right? You just fly down the river. I'll get in the right position for the photos. My girlfriend will take them, right? Not a problem for you.
That's the beauty of this scenario, Ryan, because that's a trap. That's the trap. You cannot think that way if you're leading a formation, that you're just going to fly and your wingman's just going to fly all around you wherever he wants to. There's no way you can think for your wingman, which is a requirement of a flight lead. And now you've got a tremendous amount of unpredictability there, and especially in this scenario with pretty tight airspace. So,
yeah.
And it's a common trap that people fall into because what do? They put the rookie up front and say, oh, you're the lead. You know, us experienced pilots, we're going to fly the wing because we've got these excellent stick skills. And then what happens is the wing pilot is trying to backseat drive the other pilot, and it just doesn't work. You know, you should really have the most experienced pilot leading the flight, and things just go so wrong when you say, oh, you don't know anything about it. You're a rookie. You're the lead. It's just a debacle.
But without a good briefing, I can see in this scenario that the girlfriend taking the pictures could quickly become the lead.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because it's a critical part of the brief that, you know, everybody has different responsibilities. And what is the photographer's responsibility? You know, the photographer is there to get the shot, and they will, you know, direct the subject airplane to the place that that the light's best and the angle's best. And their role is to think about the shot. It's up to the pilots to consider the safety. You know, we often have it where the photographer sees great light, sees great angle, and will direct the subject plane into a place that the subject pilot cannot safely fly. You know, and that the pilot has just got to wave off that instruction. But it's so tempting not to, because it's like, hey, you know, I've got this ace photographer telling me what to do, and he's saying step higher, and it's like in. You know, I'm on the verge of losing sight, but he's still saying step higher. So it's a fraught sort of enterprise, and we take it far too lightly.
How close do you have to be to actually get good photos?
You know, it depends on the lens the photographer is using and what they're trying to get. You know, with a wide angle lens, you know, they want the subject plane really tight. You know, oftentimes, you know, when you get really really experienced, say, military trained formation pilots in a photo flight, they quickly realize it's a different skill, because an experienced fighter pilot will want to fly tight. He's going to fly tight on exactly the 45 degree bearing line, and he's going to hold that position. And the photographer will then direct them. It's like, well, you know, I'm really not, don't want the tight shot. I want the loose shot of the small airplane in the big sky. And then it's a whole different set of skills to learn to fly loose. And in a lot of ways, flying loose is harder. You know, it's because any turn, it means an exaggerated difference in speeds to have to maintain the same angle. So, you know, there's a real art to it. It takes a practice to develop. As Richard said, it's not terribly hard. It's just different. And frankly, it's what I love about it, is that it's teamwork. You know, so much of what we do in flying is solitary, and you know, you're just the captain of your own fate out in the big sky. But formation flying is different. You know, it's a team, and you sort of succeed or fail in the enterprise together. And I love the teamwork aspect, but you got to be on the same team. And when I look at this scenario, it's like, these guys aren't.
You know, another thing to consider here is, I've flown formation in a lot of different airplanes, both military and GA. The hardest airplane in the world to fly formation in that I've flown in is a Cessna 172. It's got that high wing and a doorpost right here in your left front that blocks your vision. And, you know, relatively speaking, it doesn't have good power and flight control response. And all that makes for a very difficult airplane to fly formation in.
And the Husky in this scenario probably has some of those same faults, right?
Yeah, some, they're a little bit easier. I fly a Super Cub, and a Super Cub Husky is somewhat similar in how they're designed. They're a little bit easier than a 172, primarily because they don't have that big doorpost.
You've got the floats to complicate it, too. That certainly doesn't help with performance.
Yeah, yeah.
And the airspace.
Yeah. And, right. You know, I want to echo what Dave said. I formation flying is a ton of fun if you put your mind in the right place and you're really interested in that level of formality and discipline and the crispness on the radios. And there's an awful lot of camaraderie that can go about when you're formation flying. Just get the training before you go do it.
And where would you get that training? Because that's not something you can go to your local CFI for necessarily, right?
Yeah, unless they've been trained. I think the best guide around that I've seen for general aviation is the North American Trainers Association. They have a really good guide that we use for formation training. So this is another thing too. And this conversation is not just for GA pilots. Like, military pilots coming out and flying formation in GA, you need to recognize that you may be good at station keeping and some basics, but there's enough differences in the standards of how GA formation flying goes that you need to step back and go through some of that training yourself so you can get on the same sheet of music.
And I'd throw in, there's a FAST and Red Star, and there are others. There are some type specific groups. You know, the RVs in particular have some really, really excellent formation training. The T-34 Association. You know, there are lots of GA groups that are anxious and willing to have us take part.
You'll know it's a good one because they'll have a syllabus. They'll start you out on the wing, and they'll want to see you demonstrate this or that, and then they'll move you up from there in terms of the maneuvers, and then you earn a flight lead card and then a four-ship flight lead card. And if you see that kind of tiered progression, then you know you're in a good and if they have standards, then you know you're in a good program.
Let's, in the interest not of teaching people, via Far Mastery how to fly formation, but maybe revealing some of the issues that might not have thought of. Let's talk about, first of all, how would you join up for this flight, or would you take off in formation? You know, is joining up over the lake a good idea?
Join up is really the hardest thing to do. You know, an aerial rejoin done safely is really is probably the hardest part. And more than the stick and rudder skills or the how to do it, you know, I find that the hardest part is the mental part. I mean, you look at this stuff that Richard and his team would do at high speed close to the ground, and it's the ultimate sort of trust exercise. You know, that it's like, the people flying on his wing are totally trusting him with with their lives every time that they look, you know, because they are looking at nothing but him when they're flying. And it's the same with the lead trusting the wing. You know, the lead has got to be able to focus on the navigation and the communication and completely trust that that wing pilot is going to be able to maintain the proper separation and uphold the wing portion of the bargain. And so I would just say that the hard part about it is the mental shift that must take place of every participant. The stick and rudder stuff is pretty easy.
So you ask a good question, Ryan, because that's sort of how detailed you need to get. You absolutely would not do a formation takeoff in this scenario. You take off single ship, and your spacing would determine how strong are the winds, which way are the winds coming from, which way is the upwind side, which way are you going to turn out over traffic, how high are you going to climb. All of that has to be thought through and briefed before you take off.
How about this? I'll be over the lake. You come to the lake and we'll join up, right? So then you're flying down this narrow corridor. You've got Canada that you've got to look out for one thing. You've got to be a certain distance above the buildings of Detroit or horizontally clear them. There's even a note on the sectional and on the tack chart here that says it's heavily congested airspace, VFR traffic below the Bravo. Is there even room, like if something goes wrong here, to break out from formation? Is there any room for error on this route?
Well, it's putting a lot of pressure on the lead to navigate through that, and whatever radio has to be handled. And, you know, the other thing that we didn't bring up, which maybe is assumed, is it's the trade-off here. Okay, what are you getting out of this? For, first of all, it's a fair amount of effort. And second, as all of us agree, it's pretty high risk, and you're making the risk greater by picking that airspace because you want the nice background. Take it out over the country or a lake or hills or whatever. It just simplifies things.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, one of the options here is to go out and practice it away from this airspace first, and then if it goes well,
That's a bad option, right? Because you're still talking about two people that really don't have the training they should have from one of the groups that we've mentioned, which really is the place to start. And if you do that, then this can be a lot of fun, and you can do it safely, and everybody will enjoy themselves. But you just have to have that fundamental understanding of it.
Yeah, and I think all of those options, you can imagine them seeming like decent choices, right? To somebody that doesn't have any formation experience, you know, it just goes back to, all right, I don't have to do anything different. My friend will fly on me and handle all the formation stuff. Well, clearly that's not the way it should work. And you're asking for trouble if you do that. And I think that the tricky thing here is that, you know, as pilots, if you never do new things, you don't get better. So everybody wants to kind of push their comfort envelope and try new things, but you also don't know what you don't know. And here, that's a lot. There's a lot that you don't know if you're going into this blind, clearly. Maybe the answer is that you should have an aviation mentor, right? Someone that you can ask when you're trying something new. Maybe it's a Richard McSpadden, who's done this a lot before.
Or a Dave Hirschman, who's done it a lot in GA. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But try to figure out at least what it is that you don't know. You don't know, get the proper training. And then, as we've heard here, it can be fun. It's not necessarily that difficult, but you've got to know what you're doing.